Oh, fuck my ass. Silly. Hey, folks. This is Kevin. On this week's episode of Risk, you'll hear Victor Vernado.
And then she's like, hey, you can finger me. And I'm like, okay.
That and more. But before that, I am supposed to tell you right now that going to the post office is so old school. Yeah, that's what the copy here says, folks. Old school. You know, not like Grandmaster Flash or Cool Herc. Probably more like Perry Como and Lawrence Welk. Remember Lawrence Welk? You probably don't. You probably don't remember Lawrence Welk because I'm old school. But not like the post office. I am so Mickey fickin' hip that I am not gonna deal with the hassle of taking trips to the post office. That's why over 600,000 small businesses are already using Stamps.com to get postage right from their desks whenever they need it 24 hours a day. Stamps.com turns your computer and printer into a virtual post office. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package. Stamps.com, it's a better way to do your mailing and shipping because it's so easy to use. It's convenient. It lets you focus your time where you want on growing your business instead of time-consuming trips. No wonder $2.6 billion in postage was printed just last year alone using Stamps.com. Jesus fucking Christ, is that true? I said it. So, all right. We use Stamps.com at Risk at the Story Studio, and we love it. And right now, you can sign up for Stamps.com and you use our promo code RISK for this special offer. It's a 4-week trial plus a 110-dollar bonus offer that includes postage and a digital scale. So don't wait. Go to stamps.com before you do goddamn Mickey Ficken anything else. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in RISK. That's stamps.com. Enter RISK.
Now here's the show.
Hi there. Hello, kids. This is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison. This is Beastie Boys behind me now, and we are calling today's episode Naughty Bits. We're kind of back to form here. We are exactly 7 years into the... fuck my ass. In terms of the live shows, we're 7 years into this now. And so, you know, the very first episode we ever did was called Strange Sex. So here we are again with an episode that's pretty much just about strange sex. Three situations marked by erotic weirditude, carnal funk-nasticness, sensual singularis trisomes, and all that jazz. Now, in a little bit, we're going to hear from Sam J. It'll be Sam J's first time on the podcast. She is a comedian. I think she's based in LA now. You can find her on Twitter at Sam J Comic. She told her story at the Risk Live show in Los Angeles at the Bootleg Theater. It takes place there once a month. But before that, we're going to hear from Victor Vernado, one of the funniest and sweetest and most wonderfully talented creative people in New York City. Victor has produced all kinds of wonderful shows, films, websites. You can find him online on Twitter at Varnado. And here he is now at the Risk Live Show at the Bell House in Brooklyn, where we are also once a month, with a story we call Stir It Up.
Everybody. So, here's the thing. There's a word that I say a lot. That's okay. Okay. I say okay a lot because when people offer me choices, I'm like, okay. You know the mini worlds theory? You know, every decision creates a new world. I think I'm often in the worst one. Because I say okay so much. So I was at a bachelor party, okay, for my friend Greg. By the way, Greg is not his real name. So I'm with Greg, and we are at his bachelor party, and it's starting off with a dinner at like a meat palace. Now, I don't know, it's the restaurant. Okay, I'm calling it a meat palace. I don't know what they really call. It's a restaurant where they, like, bring out big slabs of meat, and they hand everybody knives, and then you cut the meat like you're... It's almost like trying to make you feel like a hunter if the animals were really agreeable, dead, and well-salted. But so we're at this meat palace. We're cutting off meat. We're like, we're men! Bachelor party! And we're just doing it. So at this party is Greg, not his real name, the bachelor. Eddie, a dude who was from Greg's high school, who was there in New York just for the bachelor party. And Sean, one of our friends, who is like a married dude, super repressed. He never gets out. This is a special occasion. He was happy to be in the world. There are a lot of other people there, not important, but the things you need to know is that me and Greg and most of the guys there are comedy writers, okay? That's all we do. We're comedy writers. Eddie is the wild card from out of town. He's trying to impress everybody. So we're digging the meat. We're having a good time. And then after the food is all done, Eddie's like, everybody, I've got it all planned out for after the dinner. Now, that's not what his voice really sounded like. But I'm using this voice because everything that he said was so crazy, we shouldn't have listened to him all night long. So that's not his real voice. Anyway, so he says, hey, we're going to a strip club. It's BYOB. If you know strip clubs, even if you don't, you know that usually they're not BYOB. I actually reached out to a friend of mine who's a stripper. I asked her, like, hey, what are the laws in New York City about strip clubs? And she's like, oh, actually, you can be totally nude if the strip club is BYOB. It is actually a legal thing. However, when I asked him at the time, because I didn't know this fact, when I asked him at the time, I was like, hey, Eddie, what the BYOB, what the hell? And yeah, it's a legal thing, but he like tossed that idea away, and he's like, it's an illegal Russian strip club. It's inside an office building. Let's go. Now, all the other people who are unnamed in this story were like, hell no, we're out of here. I was like, okay. Let's go. So Greg goes, Eddie goes, Sean goes, and I go. On the way, we grab like some beer, we grab a couple of bottles of vodka, and we go to this strip club. It is on the fifth floor of an office building on 35th Street, okay? In New York. It's exactly where a strip club is not supposed to be! So we go up to the fifth floor, the elevator opens, and there's this fucking huge Russian monster dude. He's just like, why are you here? He looks like a fucking James Bond, like, side villain. We freak out because we're all comedy writers. We're like, But then fucking Eddie comes forward and is like, hey, we're friends of Lenny. Lenny wanted us to come. And the guy's like, oh, you're friends with Lenny. Come in. So we go in. But before I go any further, you should all know the entire night, we never met anybody named Lenny. There's just nobody there named Lenny. Inside this strip club, on the fifth floor of an office building, first of all, there were file cabinets pushed up against the wall. So, like, it was an office space that they were like, we're just gonna have a strip club here for a little while. They hung velvet cloth from the ceiling over the file cabinets. You could still see the file cabinet shake. It was like halfway temp office, halfway 1910 opium den. So, in the middle of the room was a circular bed, okay? Circular bed with like black coverings on top of it. That'll come in a little bit later. Now, we brought beer and vodka to an illegal Russian strip club. Immediately, all the strippers were like, oh my God, you guys are the best. Because apparently, even though it's BYOB, at an illegal Russian strip club, most people don't bring beer and vodka because they don't give a fuck about liquor or sharing. They just bring their penises. So we were really popular because I had the great idea. I was like, ladies, you guys want beer? Do you guys want vodka? Let's share it with the ladies. And the strippers were like, this is the best. And we were like, this is the best. So then it gets around that Greg, it's his, I almost fucking said his real name. He'd be so mad. It gets around that it's Greg's bachelor party, okay? It's Greg's bachelor party, and everybody, the strippers were like, oh my God, it's his bachelor party. We have to give him a two-lady special dance. It's $250. Let's give him a two-lady special dance. Everybody clams up, and they're like, oh, we're not, you know, giving this two-lady special dance. Nobody wants to do it. And I'm like, oh, it's his bachelor party. We have to give him a special dance. You guys take cards? No, they don't. Okay, so I'm trying to get the money together. Do not have the money. But then they're like, well, we have an ATM machine. So I use the ATM machine to get him all the money that he needs for this special dance. Yes, my card ID was stolen. Yes. Of course it was, everyone. I'm in an illegal Russian strip club in an office building using an ATM. Of course. It was stolen. But I was like, okay, let's get this dude hooked up with this dance. He goes off for this special dance. Now, yes, they called it a special dance. I'm not saying that it was sex. I don't know what it was, okay? I'm only using a fake name because I'm certain it was not sex. So he goes away. And then the rest of the girls are like, hey, do you guys want some private dances, okay?
So I am not like a lap dance dude, okay? I'm like, why am I wasting time on this when I could be spending $20 on a woman who will totally have sex with me? Eddie is, I'm too drunk for a dance. He's just drunk. He's super drunk because he's trying to impress everybody. He didn't make it. Sean, super married. He's like, I don't know what his woman is doing to him, but he's like shut down. He's like, absolutely not. So the strippers are like disappointed, but then one of them gets a great idea. Hey, let's do a live sex show. Everybody on the bed. So they all hop on the bed. It's like at least four or five women. They all hop on the bed. They're all like brandishing vibrators. And then they turn them on. They're like writhing in a pool of nakedness. And they go down with the vibrators and they start, I'm just going to call stirring it up. So they start stirring it up. It's just like, so it's happening on the bed. And we're all like watching. We're all like watching. And I'm like not a live sex show dude either. I'm not. So I try to like relieve the tension with a little joke. There's so many women writhing around on this bed. I turn to Sean, my married friend. I'm like, too many legs, right? Sean is a repressed married dude. He is in a trance and cannot hear me. He's just staring down into the void of sex. His eyes are so wide open, just trying to suck as many images as he can into his eyes for later so he can take it to a dark place and masturbate. He's gone. So there's a sex show happening that I am not interested in. My friend Greg is gone. Eddie's drunk. So I'm like, So I go sit in a chair in the corner and start texting. Because that's what a real man does. Then, this woman comes over. Her name is Natasha, let's say. And she's like, hey, do you want a free lap dance? You look bored. And I'm like, okay. Now, at the time, I thought I was just saying okay, but I think that accidentally she thought I was like some kind of baller because we came in with all this liquor. We shared it with all of the dancers, and then I like got all this money out of the ATM, and she thought I was the dude in charge. I think that's what she thought. I was not. I'm just a normal dude. She starts the lap dance, and then she's like, hey, you can finger me. And I'm like, okay. So we start making out. And I'm making out with her. I'm fingering her. Come on, it's a legal Russian strip club town. I don't know what the fuck is going on. It's all good. We're having a blast, I think. So then at one point, she's like, you're very passionate. Would you like to come to the back room with me? And I'm like, okay. So she and I creep off to a back room, okay? We creep off to a back room. She and I are together. We are making out. We are taking each other's clothes off slowly, all right? And then, you know, we're about to get down to business, if business is fucking. Okay, so. Suddenly, the door to the room we were in swings open. There's a giant Russian dude there. Not the same dude at the door, just like his fucking twin brother, okay? He's there. Three women are with him. And then two other dudes who I can only describe as sheiks, okay? Because I've seen movies. I don't really know what the correct word is, but they're like suits. They had turbans. Okay, that's what my mind says, sheiks. They're about to have a sex party. We were in their sex party room about to have our own two-person sex party. So the Russian guy, the Russian fucking guard, like pushes everybody behind him with like one fucking big meaty arm. And he's like, hey, what the fuck is going on here? I look to Natasha. She does probably the worst thing that I think she could have done at that moment. She starts crying. She's like, oh. Then the Russian guy's like, hey! And he pulls out a big fucking knife. Okay? Like a knife, okay? Not like a knife like, hey, I wonder what mail I've got today. No, like a knife like, let's see what your rib cage looks like. And he pulls it out and he advances in such a way, he's like, I've done this plenty of times. Welcome. She starts crying even more, and I'm like, oh my God, am I about to die? I start pulling my pants up, because I'm thinking, if I'm going to die, I don't want to be one of those dudes found with his pants down in the middle of his ankles. Natasha jumps up in front of me, and she's like, no, please, please, he didn't know. I don't know what I didn't know. But it did make him pause. My pants are up, and I jump up, and I'm panicking. And I'm like, what can I say to this guy so he doesn't fucking cut me in half? So I say to him, hey, man, don't kill me for kissing a girl. That's right. That's some shit right out of a John Hughes movie. Don't kill me for kissing a girl. And he pauses. And he puts away his knife. And he goes, get out of here. And I do. I leave the room. I leave Natasha. I don't know if he fucking cut her into a million pieces. I don't give a fuck. But I'm out. I'm out. I run out to the main room. Fucking Eddie is gone. Greg is gone. Everybody's gone. I'm just the last guy there. I'm walking out of the strip club into the night. It's like the sun is just starting to come up. There are a couple of strippers on the street who are just getting off work. And they see me as the guy who is like being the baller, making out with the stripper, going into the back room. They don't know what happened. But they're like, hey, do you want to come to breakfast with us? And I'm like, oh, no. No, I do not. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Hey, let's do a live sex show. Everybody on the bed.
Way too young to be even thinking about sex, It's definitely like a peer pressure thing. Everybody in my neighborhood was like fucking, all the girls were acting like they were enjoying it, even though now I know they weren't. They were pretending like it was fucking awesome. And I was like, I need to get a piece of that action. So at 15, I picked a guy. And this kind of first time I should have known, like, eh, maybe I'm not so straight. Because there was no love involved. I just picked a good specimen. Like, you get sperm from the sperm bank. I was like, he has all this stuff. He's got light eyes, he's light skinned, his hair is curly. This will do. This will work out. This should be great. He's the ideal attractive. And I picked him. I was like, ah, we're going to do it. And I'm ready. So I picked the night. I got myself all ready to go. I made sure my room was very clean. Very clean. I mean, there's only so much you're doing at 15. I made sure my room was clean. I put on my new sports bra. Broke out my best teen spirit, and I was like, I'm fucking doing this. It's gonna happen. And I get to his house, and we're making out awkwardly, because that's what young people do, because we're dumb, and we don't know what's up. And he's like, oh, let's go to my room. And I'm like, cool. And get in his room, and we're kissing, and puts my hand on his penis, and I think he had an erection. To this day, I'm not sure if it was an erection. To this day, I don't know what it was. Because I encountered plenty of dicks after that, and it never measured up to the other ones, so I don't know if it was, I don't know what the fuck, but I tested it, whatever. I was fucking a daring girl. And so he had me touch it, and I was like rubbing it, like that, because I don't know. I was just handling it, just doing stuff. Just doing shit, you know what I mean? We're kissing. He licked my boobs, but I was very flat chested, so it was just weird as fuck. It was like he was licking like my rib cage. It was just all weird. I was flat chested and a very athletic young lady, and but we were trying to make sex happen. We were two young people trying to fuck, you know what I mean? And as we were making out and I was groping his junk, I wasn't really that into it, so I was trying to find motivation. So I was thinking about guys that I liked at the time, other than him, like famous dudes, which is another big red flag. I realized now that every famous dude I liked was questionably homosexual. Like, I was very attracted to femininity in men. Like, I liked Ryan Phillippe and Justin Timberlake, which if they made out, I would think that was a lesbian couple kissing. And I had a big Chris Francisco from Drew Hill. I was like, oh, wow. And he's obviously the gayest dude to ever be allowed to act like he likes women, besides Prince, who's not gay, he's a god. But those were the dudes I was into. So I'm going through my Justin Timberlake, Cisco, Ryan Phillippe, Rolodex, mostly Ryan Phillippe crew intentions images, trying to make this connection with this dude happen. And we get into it, well, he gets into it, and he starts taking stuff off, and I'm typically, like, taking off my own sweatpants. Because I was a young dyke at heart, didn't know how to be sexy at all, so I had, like, sweatpants and a baseball jersey on. But it was back in the 90s where you could, like, get away with that and just be a tomboy, so it was cool. So I was taking all that stuff off, he was taking this stuff off, we were doing the heavy kissing and all that. And so he's like, you ready? And I was like, I guess we get some condom. Which now I'm pretty sure it's too big. Because I don't think they make condoms for 15-year-old dicks. Because 15-year-olds aren't supposed to be fucking. So I'm pretty sure it wasn't an accurate size or anything. But he gets this thing, and he puts it on, and I'm like, all right, this is going to happen. And he puts it in, and I don't feel it. I have no idea if it's in or not in. He's making faces like it's in, so I'm like, okay, it's in. And I'm just gonna go with this energy. Which is how women learn how to have sex, which is so fucked up. And why we don't orgasm until like we're 40. Because it's like, this is what we learn to do. I'm just like, oh. I didn't realize this was going to get so personal. And he goes, he puts it in, and he's on top of me. And I don't know, maybe 5 minutes, maybe 20. I don't even know how much time has gone by. but I'm getting bored. I'm getting physically and visibly uninterested. At least I think I am, but he's so into it. I'm like, maybe to him he doesn't get it. I'm totally out of it. I don't care. But we had left the TV on all night. We just needed some light. You know, like, young people, we don't have candles. We don't have to be sexy. So we just have the glow of the TV set the ambiance. And he's on top of me, and I peek over his shoulder to see the TV, and I realize that the NBA Finals were on. East Coast Finals, big game. Reggie Miller, Jordan, it's now tied up. It's a game four. Miller had been accused of pushing off for Jordan in the last game. This is Jordan's time for redemption. So at this point, I am locked the fuck in. So every time he would move, I would kind of adjust myself to see the game over his shoulder, and he thought that I was like thrusting myself towards him. I just wanted to see what the fuck was going on. It was the fourth quarter, and it got really intense. And Jordan had the ball, and it was tied up. He was about to push off Miller to go for the fucking fadeaway, and I reacted, and he thought I was reacting to him, but I wasn't. I was reacting to Jordan, which is how else I should have known when I was very gay. Penis, but it took me a while to wake up. And as that's going on, I'm like, this is fantastic. And it's like the moment of climax for me, and I guess for him, was happening for two very different reasons. His brother, who just got out of jail, walked in the room. So the next con brother walks in very casually, and he's like, oh, you beating that shit up, huh? That's what's up. Just gotta get some stuff out the closet, and I'm gonna be out of here. And now, oh my God, I get it. You know, like I shouldn't be here. Touche. It's fucking nice. And as he's exiting the room, he stops, shows his brother a Magnum condom. He's like, yo, next time you gotta hit it with one of these. And walks out as if he didn't realize we were both 15. You know what I mean? It was so fucking weird. And I leave and I feel terrible because I'm like, this just wasn't love. It wasn't the connection that I wanted. I throw away my brand new Calvin Klein underwear because now they're spotted because I've broken my flower. And I just curl up in the bed and know that my mom was right. You know, you gotta wait for love. You can't just go out here trying shit. I never called dude again. He's calling me like crazy. I'm avoiding him, which is a weird way to do the guy who took your virginity. And I'm pretty sure it's why he's gay now. So we both ended up gay for very different reasons, I think. And life moves on. I keep it tight. As the saying goes, for years to come, I decide I'm gonna wait for love, and I get a boyfriend, eventually a steady boyfriend in high school, and it's the right way, you know, it's the way young love should be, hand jobs after school, Taco Bell dates, where we felt really fancy, Chili's, you know what I mean? We did it all right, the movies, Hello Kitty presents on Valentine's Day, quality, sweet, good love. Eventually, we do it, and I still fucking hate it, right? And now I'm really confused. I'm like, I love him, so I don't get this. And it was the worst, because I wanted to like it. Like, the first thing was an experiment to know what my vagina does when it digs inside. That's really what I wanted. I was like, how does it work? I hear a lot about it. Let me experience it. But the second time was for love, and I still didn't like it. I was still very uncomfortable. And I went to my female friends that I really wanted to like it, so they all said, I'm going to stay with sex. I was like, tell me what I'm doing wrong. My head lives every time he gets on top of me. I'm uncomfortable. I don't know where to put my boobs. I'm moving left. I'm moving right. Do I just not move them? Do I let them hang? What's the rule of that shit? I'm unsure. Sweat's on me a lot. It drips. It hits my face in places. I don't really appreciate that. I'm not a fan. He moves up and down a lot. Sometimes his balls hit my butt. And weird way that I'm like, I noticed that it throws me off my rhythm. I don't know, it's weird. And then he just comes and he goes to sleep, and I am so unsatisfied in this process. What am I doing wrong? And they go like, bitch, you how it works. Get married, live forever. I don't think so. And we broke up, so I go on my journey, I meet a girl. And now this is the first girl. I'm like, maybe I like girls, which is like a huge awakening. Because, like, for a long time, you can go through like, then, like, everybody likes Cheetos, so I like Cheetos. And then you taste like Cape Cod jalapeno kettle chips. And you're like, holy fuck! I didn't know shit could be this good when it comes to stuff and it comes out of bed. So that's how I was when I met this girl. I was like, whoa, girl, I like her, I'm dating her, and I think like, I want to fuck this girl. Huge! Because I didn't know how gay I was until I even met this girl. You know what I'm saying? Like, I walked around my life thinking, I'm going to marry a dude, we're going to have like monthly threesomes on a nice beach. It's going to be great. We'll both like do this weird threesome thing, but I'm going to still like be with a guy. This was the first girl I was like, maybe I can be with a girl. It was a big deal, you know? How gay are you, smart? Are you just like play with titties gay, or are you deep pussy gay? Questions you have to ask yourself when you're about to step into this territory. What is it? Who are you? And I was like, nah, man, I'm deep pussy gay, I think. I think I am. I think I can eat pussy. I think I'm capable. I think I am, maybe. It was still weird. It was the night I was going to do it. I decided, this is the night I'm going to eat this pussy. And I got him on, and I had to really, like, mentally keep myself in zones. I was still very nervous. You know what I mean? Very weirded out by it in some ways. Weirded out by myself, where I was willing to go. You know, a lot of in-the-mirror conversation in the bathroom. Just like, you got this. You are a champion. A lot of John Madden in the huddle. I'm going to eat this pussy tonight. Go, 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 go. Get myself geared up, come out the bathroom, ready to go, charged up. I'm gonna take this pussy down the fucking chain. I know I am confident. And then she lay down on the bed and she opened her legs, and I realized I had never seen a vagina from this perspective. I've seen mine from this perspective. I had never seen it quite like that. I was not ready at all. I was like, holy shit, what is that? I was kind of poking at it a little bit. I wanted to tell her to close her legs and like, let's just go to church and figure it out. Let's just pray and get ourselves together. And in that moment that I'm like freaking out under these covers, head in the cover, staring at vagina, Her uncle walks in the room because she lives in the basement of this house with her family. So her grandmother lives there, her brother lives there, she lives there, another uncle lives there. She's African. She said in front. She's African. So everyone lived in one house. She lived in the basement of this house. Her uncle just got out of jail. Moved into the basement with her because he didn't have anywhere to go. The only available bathroom was in her room. So her just as your uncle busted in the room. He's like, I need to use the bathroom, so y'all gonna have to hold on for a few minutes. At this point, I'm like, so just jail dudes are so used to group sex scenarios that they don't even flinch at this shit. They just proceed. So he's like, I just use bathroom. You guys hold on. He proceeds to go in the bathroom and take a 2-minute shit. Plop noises, extreme noises, the whole nine, a very audible 2-minute shit. And once again, because I was having a panic attack, I was like, touche. You know me well. All my sexual experiences have been balanced, at least my first times, by an ex-con in urgent need of some bullshit. Y'all been cool, please.
Oh, he is. here comes trouble. Put your helmet on, we'll be heading for a fall. Yeah, the whole thing's gonna blow. And the devil's got my number. It's long overdue, he'll come looking soon. Yeah, the whole thing's gonna blow. Oh, here comes trouble. These people talk too much, need to shut them up. Yeah, I'd rather be alone. Can you feel that rumble? All this borrowed time, it's been running out. It's the ending of the show. But I know now. Yeah. Yeah, I know now. Yeah. Everything's gonna be okay. Oh, I keep telling myself.
This is Risk. This is TV on the Radio behind me now. And we just heard from Sam J. You can find her on Twitter at Sam J Comic. Before that, we heard a little interstitial by our episode editor, Jeff Barr, made from a sample of Bob Marley and some vibrator sounds. Vibrators are something that you can get if you go to adamandeve.com. And for a limited time, you can get 50% off of just about any item. Listen, they have some great brands there. Lilo, Roxoff, Fleshlight, Liberator, Lubes from Pure and Wet. The selection is just extraordinary. Top shelf stuff, much more affordable stuff, and stuff that you just flat out need, like condoms. So why not take advantage of it? When you select your one item at 50% off, you'll also receive 3 free adult DVDs, plus a free exclusive gift. That's a clit bumper, I can tell you right now. And to top it all off, they'll even throw in free shipping for your entire order. That's adamandeve.com. Use the offer code RISK at the checkout. Adamandeve.com. The offer code is RISK. Our final story comes to us from one of our recent shows at the Bell House in Brooklyn. Here is Shane O'Neill. Shane is a writer and an improviser and a stand-up comedian based here in New York City. Here's Shane now with a story we call Dr. Love.
So I was 22 when I decided that I had a medical fetish. The way that I came to it, it was kind of a circuitous sort of like heady thing. Because technically I was out of the closet. Very technically I was sexually active. Like I could check, yes, sexually active if asked, but like it was more up here than down here. It was really based on like liberal arts. So I was like very sex positive, but I just wasn't having that much sex. And I was reading a lot of Dan Savage at the time. Woo! Yeah, so, like I said, a lot up here, not a lot down here. But part of it was, so I was technically out of the closet, but I really had mostly been with women. I'd been with a few men here and there. But I was like, I'm 22, and I've never had an STI screening. I'm going to go get an STI screening. And I was still on my parents' insurance, and I was like, you know, as sexually liberated as I thought I was, ready to be like, I'm getting an STI screening. So I was like, I saved up money, and I paid out of pocket. But what I did is I went to one of those like urgent care facilities, which I didn't realize was like really bad manners for medical stuff, because they're there if like you cut your finger when you're like slicing a bagel, or like you have the flu and you need to go back to work. But I went in and I was like, hello, I need you to make sure everything's fine in my genitals. And so the nurse was a little bit like, okay, well, we'll see what the doctor says. And the doctor was just fucking pissed. He was like, really didn't want to do it. And he was kind of trying to talk me out of it. Like, he kept being like, well, how do you feel? Do you feel okay? And I was like, well, you know, 90% of STDs don't have any symptoms at all. Thank God he didn't ask for specifics about what, like, being sexually active meant, because he would have laughed and I would have left and whatever. And I never would have gone on this journey. I never would have gotten here. Like, he really was trying to talk me out of it. And finally he's like, okay, whatever, fine. Just take off your shorts. And so I take down my pants, and this was totally unexpected to me, but in the time it took me to take my pants off, I'd gotten like a huge boner. Just like a huge boner. But again, really in my own head about sexuality, and I was like, I'm sure that happens all the time. I'm not ashamed of my body. But I was a little bit freaked out. So then he kind of is like, and then he reaches in and he grabs a hold of my scrotum, and as soon as he does, I fucking shoot a little bit of pre-cum. Not a lot, but like it was visible. Which, again, not unheard of. I'm not ashamed of my body. But we were both pretty fucking surprised. He, after it happened, just went, are you fucking nervous? He didn't say fucking. He said, are you nervous? And I was like, yes, because I was. And still, I've been nervous a lot, and I've never shot whatever. So I was like, what does it mean? What does it mean? Reading a lot of Dan Savage, all up in my head. And then he had a column in Savage Love about a medical fetish. And I was like, why didn't I think of that? Of course, I have a medical fetish. That's what's going on. So like, I just settled that in my head. I was like, well, you know, one day I'll find the right person with the right safe word. And we're just, you know, I was really ready for it. So I was 22 and I just discovered like the Men for Men Craigslist pages. I was a little bit of a late bloomer. I talked to people, they were like, yeah, when I was 13, I did that. I was like, whatever. But I found an ad. I was living in Madison, Wisconsin, and the ad said, the doctor is in. And I was like, what? So I opened the ad, and it's like, offering free, confidential, thorough medical screenings specializing in the genito-urinary tract. Your pleasure and happiness is my number one concern, totally confidential, whatever. And I was like, this is perfect. So I sent like a super sex-positive email to him. I was like, I just want to lay out my boundaries, and I don't do sounding, and you can't use needles, and no blood play, and blah, 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 and this is my safe word. And I remember I was like, tell me what you think about this. And he was like, you know, it sounds like you might be interested in more fetish things, but this is more of just like a medical scene. And I was like, that's great, I'm so excited. So we set up a time. We set up a time to meet at his house, and I was like, by the way, my best friend knows your address, and if I don't call him in 2 hours, he's calling the police. Which was not true. But again, I knew that it sounded responsible. So I'd ask him all these questions about whatever, but when I got to his house and opened the door, I realized I'd forgotten to ask him, are you 125 years old? Because he was really, 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 really old. So he opened the door, and by the way, I'm a fan of older gentlemen, but like this guy was real old. So he answered the door, and he had a cane, and he was wearing a white lab coat, which I appreciated, and a stethoscope. Oh, and he had his name. Well, I shouldn't say his name, even though I'm like 73% sure he's dead by now. Let's say his name was like Dr. Bennington. Sounded a lot like that. Embroidered on his coat. So he's like, oh, welcome to my office, please. He had a really bad cough. So he's like, well, just sit in the intake room. And so his apartment is just like really full of stuff, and it really hasn't been cleaned in a long time. And everything is related to either like Catholic art. There's all these books that are like great Catholic art, or like beautiful cathedrals. And actually, it was cool. He had like bits of altars that he had chopped up and had hanging from the ceiling, which I actually found quite cool, but also intimidating. And then just gay porn everywhere. Just so much gay porn. I don't know if there are any homosexual gentlemen, but do you guys remember Bellamy? Or is Bellamy still a thing? Yeah. So he had...
Yeah.
How can I forget? So he had a Bellamy calendar, which really, because it was just like a twink squatting with like a big heart on, and then it was like, on the calendar was like, call Jan, blah, blah, like it was his real calendar. And I was just like, who has a life where they can just have that be their calendar? So whatever. So he starts the oral, the spoken part of the exam. And it goes on for a long time where he's just like, do you have a history of diabetes in your family? And I was like, yes, I do. And I'm like, do you have a history of heart disease in your family? I was like, yes, I do. One of the ones he asked, he was like, do you smoke? And at the time, I was a very heavy smoker, but I was in such denial, and I was so freaked out about it that I was like, no, I don't smoke, even though it was to, like, a fake doctor. I was just so in the habit of it because I was so scared about insurance, but I was like, no, I don't smoke. So I don't know exactly how long the spoken intake section went, but it felt like a long fucking time. Like, under an hour, but more than half an hour. And he was even like, we're almost done, and once we have this on file, we never have to do it again. Which is cool. He was verisimilitude. It was whatever. So then he was like, well, that concludes our intake procedures. Please go up to my office. And he points to his stairwell, and I was like, okay. And he's like, I'll see you up there in my office. And I was like, I get it. And then he went, it's my bedroom. And I was like, it's like, I know. I know. So I go up the stairs and I walked past his bathroom and I really won't forget it because he had like a big enema bag hanging in his bath. Oh, sorry. Okay. That wasn't the part that freaked me out. what freaked me out was he had like seven giant butt plugs. Which again, mostly up here, whatever. And then he had like a suction cup realistic dildo just like stuck on the wall. And then there was a, hand to God, there was a goddamn rubber ducky sitting on this, like a rubber ducky just sitting on. I was like, what is happening in this person's house? Oh, and then, so I go into his bedroom, his office. Oh, and by the way, I realized that he had set me up because it was taking him like 20 minutes to get up the stairs. He was just like, just lurching. It's fine, we all are gonna age. And his bedroom had there wasn't even like shelving. It was just floor to ceiling VHS porn, gay porn on one wall, which I was really astounded by. And I remember one of them was called Brothers Peeing. And so I was like, oh, I assume it's like black guys, like brothers. But I looked and it was like two white guys. So I think it was just supposed to be like, hey, mom's gone. You want to pee? I don't know what it was supposed to be. And he had a pile of dirty laundry. Or I guess I assume it was dirty. I'm sorry. I don't mean to make assumptions about his life. But he had a pile of laundry, and on top were like seven pairs of sequined like hot pants. So I still don't know what that was about. I don't know if he was dating a go-go boy or had a roller disco birthday party or whatever. But so at this point, I was kind of freaked out, and I was like, maybe this isn't what I wanted. Maybe I should just get out of here. And then I took a deep breath, and I was like, no, you're a medical fetishist. This is what you came for. It's not perfect. Just go through with it. But honestly, and like this was really the more present thing. I was like, and I mean, if things get weird, I can throw him down the stairs real easy because it was like real frail. So he comes in, and then he's like, now we'll be beginning the physical portion of the exam. Please disrobe. And I'll be frank, this was good. This was kind of scratching the itch. This is what I was, yes, I want to role play a little medical power play. So he takes my pulse, and then he starts listening to my chest with his stethoscope. And he's like, take a deep breath, and I do. And then he said, you said you weren't a smoker. But it sounds like you have congestion in your lungs. And so I turned, like, beet red. And then I went, well, I have a little cold. I just have a cold. And then he gave me, like, a you're naughty look and said, you're supposed to tell your doctor if you have a cold. So then eventually, as I imagined, like he started doing a lot more tests in my genito-urinary tract. So then he was like, I have a proposal for you. I'm running a new study. It's a psychological study about the sex response system, entirely voluntary, but would you be interested? And I was like, yes, I get it. I know I'm supposed to. So he gives me a blindfold, like one of those like sleeping things, and I put it on. And he's like, here's how it works. I'm going to give you stimulation, and you tell me whether you prefer stimulus A or stimulus B. The first thing he does is he brushes my nipple with a blush brush, like a makeup brush. And he's like, stimulus A. And then he pulls out a painter's brush and starts brushing my nipple. And then he's like, stimulus B. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Oh, by the way, he also, I forgot, he said, if you consent to the study, this visit will be completely free. I was like, what? What? So we did that for, again, I mean, who knows? It seemed like a really long time to have someone, like, brushing you with paintbrushes. And he kept acting like as though it was an actual study where he's like, well, these results are very unusual. And I'm like, yeah, it's unusual that I showed up because I'm sure it doesn't happen. But you know what? I'm not going to lie. I don't mean to talk smack. I started enjoying myself. And, you know, I was trying as hard as I could to get into this headspace. And I was starting to really get somewhere, and it was weird enough, but you get sort of a nerd to it, and it, you know, things started intensifying, and the stimulations got stronger and with more sundry things. The climax of it was he was stimulating my scrotum, and then he said, and for the final part of this study, I'm going to use an instrument doctors rarely use. And then he sucked my dick. And it wasn't bad. It really wasn't bad. Like I said, I hadn't had much in the way of sexual contact. It's what I came for, etc. But I do remember I was like looking up at his ceiling and looking at the water damage in the cracks on his ceiling. And I was like, this isn't a doctor's office. And like I appreciated the white lab coat, but like he wasn't a doctor. So we've finished and whatever, and kind of immediately, like while I was staring at the ceiling, I was just like, you know, there are some things that I'm probably just never, it's just going to be in your head and it's better left just imagining it and pursuing it was a great idea, but like, it was a real lesson. Like, some things are really, truly better in your head, which you couldn't have told me when I was 22. I was like, no, it's better if you do it, you do it, you always do it. But like, I really was like, no, this is something that is a great idea, but in reality, you know, everyone has aging bodies and weird quirks and Bellamy calendars and whatever. Anyway, he finished. We had a great time. He then pulled out a card that he gave me that was like, Dr. Bennington, MD, and was like, I'll expect you at a checkup in at least a month later. And I was like, absolutely. And I was like, never. Coda to the story, I don't think I had a physical within the next year. No boners. No boners at physicals for the rest of my life. Thank you. Thank you very much. And yeah, my sex life is a lot more down here than up here. So thank you so much.
That is all for this week's episode, folks. This is Coast Modern behind me now, and we just heard from Shane O'Neill. Now I'm going to list all the places. Risk is coming next on September 17th. We are back at the Bootleg Theater in Los Angeles. On September 17th, we are also in Salt Lake City, Utah. Come on out, Salt Lake. We had such an amazing show last time. We're thrilled to be coming back. Then on September 22nd, for the first time ever, Risk will be in Nashville, Tennessee. I cannot wait to be in Nashville. I'm a huge Bob Dylan fan and a huge Robert Altman fan, and I can't wait to be, for the first time ever, in the city that is so central to the work of those guys. If you are from Nashville, let me know, where should I go? What should I do with the time that I have there? On September 28th, we're back in Brooklyn at the Bell House, and on September 30th, for the first time ever, we'll be in Richmond, Virginia. The theme that night is juicy, and we're still taking pitches for that, so go to the submissions page at risk-show.com. New Orleans, we are there on November 11th. This will also be my very first time in the city of New Orleans. I have never set foot in that town either. I am so excited. Folks, the theme that night is legends. Still taking pitches. On November 12th, we're in Baltimore. That's going to be one hell of a show. Come on out, Baltimore. The theme is wounded. You can still pitch us for that one as well. And going a little bit further toward the end of the year here, there is our November 18th show in Chicago. Now, this is a part of Chicago Podcast Festival, right? We are thrilled to be a part of that for the first time ever. The theme that night is Frenzy. Frenzy on November 18th in Chicago. Send your submissions, your pitches, to the submissions page at risk-show.com. Tell all your friends that they can find us online on Twitter and Facebook at Risk Show. On Twitter, I'm at the Kevin Allison. And we teach storytelling also at thestorystudio.org. Whether you'd like to learn storytelling for the stage, or just for creative personal exploration, or for your career, storytelling is a skill you can turn to in a job interview, or a performance review, or at a client lunch, or when you have to speak during a staff meeting, or when you have to speak in front of a conference, or when you have to craft a whole campaign, or even just draft an email that's going to stand out from the rest. You are telling stories already, but with our help, you can learn to tell them far more skillfully, more emotionally, more compellingly. You will be heard and remembered. Look for us at thestorystudio.org. Folks, today's the day. Take a risk.
Hey, you can finger me.
Okay.
Hey, what the fuck is going on here?
Don't finger my girlfriend.